Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And good morning, everybody. Welcome in to Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game. Great to be with you on maybe the most fun day of the year to do a sports talk radio show the day after the brackets are announced. Caroline Fenton is on vacation, out this week. D-Mace, how could you miss March Madness? What is going on? Caroline must have something very, very special going on for to miss shows in March. Being the diehard sports fan she is, I don't know. I don't know the story behind that.
It's gotta be just like that. She can't talk about it on the radio. Like I can't talk about it. But I mean, listen, she'll be back, and March Madness will still be going on. You know,
or Nick. Any scoop on what's going on with Caroline there?
I have zero.
She's on vacay, you know, she's with the fam.
She's definitely put her phone on airplane mode because I have not heard from her at all.
Exactly.
No grid from Caroline. No clips. And I was like, whoa, what kind of morning is this?
The last time I seen Caroline, it was on her story, and she had a cold one in her hand with some real crazy, funky sunglasses on, and she was about to get it turned up. Now, I don't know where she's at now, but that was yesterday. Now, she could be anywhere. I mean, hell, somebody need to go check the beach, okay? Because she just may be laying on the beach right about now with a few cold ones on her side. So, hey, we don't know.
It's a good way to spend a day.
Hey, you're right about that.
Well, we got a lot going on. We've got the Vanderbilt coaching search. We're going to hit that a little bit later. Who's the right person for the next Vanderbilt basketball job, especially at the state of the program right now? It's at the bottom, trying to work back up. Vanderbilt's women's team did get in.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness. I was relieved because they had a bad loss in the SEC tournament.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a program that the standard is to get to the tournament every year. They made it 27 out of 29 years, but they had not been to the tournament in over a decade. So congratulations to Shea Ralph. When she inherited that program, man, it was in trouble. They had all kinds of COVID issues. They had injury issues. She had to build it really from scratch. So hats off to her and her crew. They made it. I got my take it to the bank thanks to that. Because it was the first four. They're in the first four. So they used up all the slack. And your Sparties, D-Mace, they slipped a little bit. There was a little talk of, will they be in the first four? But they got the 8-9. My theory a little bit as we talk about the brackets here. By the way, we're going to talk to Adam Vingan later this hour and talk about the Predators. 12-0-2 in the last 14.
They are on the heat.
Another win. That was in Seattle. So they've got the Sharks tomorrow night. The Blues and the Wild keep pushing up from behind. Vegas won yesterday, so it continues to be a great race down the stretch, jockeying for positions, for seeds, for playoff spots. So we'll get to that with Adam later this hour. But to the bracket, my theory as I watched the bracket is I almost thought that some of the teams that were discussed as maybe bubble teams, maybe even out, were put in the 8-9 game. I almost think that the committee looks at it, and I don't know how you'd feel about it. Is it better to be a 10 or an 11 than it is an 8 or a 9 because you get the one seed in the second game?
Yeah.
So I don't know how they look at that.
That's if the one seed advances.
Right. I guess we can't assume that anymore because there's been a couple of 16s that have won, but
there's a
pretty good chance you're going to face the one if you're able to win that 8-9. But
yeah,
I'm curious about that. Like if I were to ask a bunch of coaches and told them, you know, would you rather be an 8, a 9, or 11 or 12 even, right? Because the way college basketball is now, there will be 12s that are favored over 5s.
Exactly.
So there's not much of a difference between a 12 and a 5. And then because in the second game, if you're a 12-5 and you beat the 5, you're going to play the 4 or the 13 in the second game. That's a lot different than playing the 1 seed in the second game.
Yeah, because I think a lot of it is just styles. It's not necessarily – now, you may have, you know, say like, you know, number one Kentucky, you mean UConn versus Stetson. More than likely, you figure UConn win that game. But then there are other, like, once you get past the 116s, but there can be upsets. But once you get past that 116, I think you try to set it up where styles are going to make the game. Maybe you're going against a up-tempo team that and then another team loves to slow it down. You're going against a team, there's a team that's, you know, say like Kentucky, who averages, what, 90 points a game or close to it, somewhere around there. They're the number one of the top teams in the country at scoring per game. Well, you match them up with a team that plays really good defense, say in the second round. Or you say you believe their potential matchup in the second round could be a team that plays really good defense. So that styles make games. It's not necessarily we got two, you know, run and gun teams. We got a team that loves the run and gun in Kentucky and say a team that loves to play defense. Say like Iowa. I mean, not Iowa, yeah. But Purdue. Say Purdue.
That Big, you know, Ten style.
They slow it
there's
down.
A certain, yeah, exactly, style. Wisconsin, uh-huh, another one like
slow
that.
Slow it down.
Grind it on you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's, to me, you know, that's what truly makes the you know, March Madness like the best time in sports. I mean,
oh, yeah,
it truly is. It's, to me, it's over, you know, the NFL playoffs, college football playoffs, to me. Now, other people may think differently, but it's just the fact that in a week span, you got teams that you may not have seen much. You get a chance to see them, and then they might upset a team that, you know, many pick probably more than likely to go to Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight. It happens. That's why people love March Madness so much, because, you know, just because you're a 16th seeded team, say like St. Peter's, doesn't mean you can't win a game. Basketball is that type of sport. Like, if the ball's going in the basket, I don't care how good the other team is, you may lose that game.
I have to say, there had to be some flashbacks, mm-hmm, when St. Peter's popped up there against Tennessee in the first.
Oh, man, yes.
Some Kentucky fans are going, St. Peter's. We know a little something about St. Peter's.
Exactly. Don't take them lightly.
So I don't think there'll be a sneak attack,
exactly,
right, in that game. So Tennessee gets a two after all of that, after losing to Mississippi State. Mississippi State gets Derek Mason's Spartans,
yes,
in the first round. So
we were
actually on the air. Mm-hmm. On Friday, while both of those games were being played, Michigan State took Purdue right to the wire. It was a really good battle, and Tennessee laid the egg, mm-hmm, against Mississippi State to pretty much hand the one seed to North Carolina. So Tennessee is a two. They're in the same bracket as Purdue. That's an interesting flashback, mm-hmm, because the last great Tennessee team that made a good run was the team that won the SEC tournament. And they lost to Purdue in the Sweet 16 in a game. I feel like it went to overtime. It was a great, mm-hmm, game. That was 2018 or 19? 2018, mm-hmm, I think. Maybe 2017? But we were comparing that Tennessee team, mm-hmm, to this year's Tennessee team, mm-hmm, right? So it's interesting
that
we had that conversation.
It was before the pandemic, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so it might have been 2018, somewhere around there. And they end up losing where the point guard just went completely off for Purdue, and they end up winning that game. Well, did it go over to overtime?
I'm going to look this up just to make sure.
I think it went to
overtime. 2019, 99-94, yeah, in overtime, yeah, was the final score. Oh, man, what
and
a
they
game
could
that
not
was.
Stop that guard for nothing. He just had a field day.
So, yes, I know people in the recency bias is remembering last year's game, mm-hmm, between Purdue and Fairleigh Dickinson. Everybody's, yes, like, Purdue can't do anything in the tournament. Well, they did that night against,
yeah,
Tennessee. They beat them. Purdue was 26-9 that year. They went 15 for 31 from three in that game. I'm, mm-hmm, looking at the box score now. Ryan Klein went 7 for 10,
yes,
from three. That had 27 points. Carson Edwards, 5 for 14 from 3, had 29. So that 1-2 punch. And that was obviously pre-Zach Edey.
Yeah.
Who will be the key. Now, those two would have to get to the regional final, the final eight, before they would play one another. So there's a lot of games to be won. I think, you know, Tennessee fans are going to say, hey, look, let's get to the Sweet 16 first here, mm-hmm. based on their track record. Same thing with Purdue, right? They can't count their chickens.
No, because, I mean, if you're looking at their Purdue, well, they start off with either Grambling or Middle Tennessee State. I guess they're in the play-in.
No, it's not
Middle Tennessee State. Excuse me. I'm sorry. Who is this?
Who is MTST? I forgot.
Just looking at it. Well, they're in the play-in. That's what it is. Team and Grambling are in the play-in. So it will be determined who they play in the next couple of nights in their first round, meaning Purdue. But looking at Purdue's bracket, I mean, Gonzaga, Kansas.
Montana State.
They got Gonzaga. You got Kansas. Just in that whole Midwest. Then you got Tennessee. It seems like Tennessee, that South Carolina game, if indeed they do make it that far, that game's going to be tough, I believe, for them. But I'm not sure UT's bracket is all that hard, if you look at it.
I think if you're Tennessee and if you're Purdue, mm-hmm. I think you can't have any complaints.
No, you can't. Especially Tennessee.
I agree. You know, Creighton is the three. Creighton, you probably look at the name and say Creighton.
No, but they're a good team.
But they're playing that Big East, mm-hmm. and they're very, very good. So don't sleep on them. You've got Kansas as the four. Kansas mm-hmm. is not the Kansas that they are most
years. Injured.
They've been very banged up. Very thin to start with. And Hunter Dickinson is hurt. I don't even know if Hunter Dickinson hasn't even had a great year. I feel like there might be a little senioritis with him. He's been around so long. So I think Kansas has got issues. I think Samford is going to give them a really good game just in the first round. So I think Purdue and Tennessee have good draws. I have not filled out my bracket. By the way, I'm a one bracket guy. I'm not this guy that enters five different things and puts five different draws in there and figures one of them will be good. I'm not that guy. I'm going to go one. If I'm going down, which I did last year, I finished last in my thing last year, because remember last year none of the top seeds made it. I finished last. I'm not talking about, no, I didn't do very well. I'm talking, I finished last in my pool. Wow,
so what's really your gauge this year?
And really, I think I was in two different pools. I think I finished last in both.
You have a good gauge on it this year for your bracket or no?
I try to see. This is probably part of my problem. I overthink it. I wait until Wednesday to pick.
Why are you waiting until Wednesday?
Maybe I should just fill it out tonight. And just
obviously you have the play-in
games. I look at matchups, and I'm like, what about the matchup here? What about this? Like you were saying, it's the styles,
yeah,
right?
Styles.
It's, you know, like for example, Wisconsin. Wisconsin has got, they're a five seed. They're playing James Madison, 31-3.
That's mm-hmm. a good team, by the way.
James Madison?
James Madison is a very sexy pick right mm-hmm. there. But I've watched Wisconsin. They're hard-nosed. They could, you know, they could win and then win another one. Because I'm not blown away by Duke this year, but I think it's harder to pick than it was even 5 years ago mm-hmm. because of the older players that have stuck around, the COVID. So you have a lot of very experienced players, guys who are 20. We talked about it a lot, 22, 23, who are on their fifth full season of college basketball. You know, like Josiah Jordan James played mm-hmm. five full seasons for Tennessee. Five. So when you have older players, some of the mid-major teams have older players, mm-hmm. right? Those guys have transferred, sat out. They're older. So I think it levels off the playing field some, and there's not a big advantage. There hasn't been for a long time, but now that advantage I think is even less for those Power 5, Power 6 conferences mm-hmm. that play a tougher night-in, night-out schedule. That's my theory anyway. And that's why we saw San Diego State and Florida Atlantic mm-hmm. get to the Final Four last year. And some of the teams are like, how did they make it? Like, if you look year in and year out now, there's almost always at least one that makes it to the Final Four. You're like, how did they make it? Well, that's what we are seeing now in college basketball.
Well, I mean, and this is why, again, this is why I love March Madness, because you never know what's going to happen. You go in thinking, you fill out your brackets, and I don't know, I know everyone always fills out at least that one or two upset, you know, like major upset. You have to pick it. You just don't know which one it's going to be. But this is why you love March Madness, because you just don't know what you're going to get. You don't know. I was watching this morning and on ESPN, and they were talking about Kentucky and how, you know, this is, you know, the pressure is on Kentucky, especially after losing so early in the SEC tournament. The pressure's on them because, listen, Calipari has been doing this for a very long time, and he has a really good team. This team really started to come on the second half of the season. They're one of the top teams in scoring in college basketball. I don't think they rank top in defense. Their defense is horrible. But we can have teams like this, you know, going up against, you know, a lower seed and then end up losing, because it's, if the ball's falling in the hoop, it's one and done. It's not a series. It's not about who's the better team. It's about who's the best team that night.
I agree.
Not necessarily who's the better team overall.
I think that's another thing that makes it even more unpredictable than it used to be, because with each passing year, there's more and more mm-hmm. three-point shots being attempted. The line is further back. So I think it increases the chances of some variance, right? Let's take a look at Tennessee's performance against Mississippi State. Mm-hmm. What was the deal? They could not buy a three-point shot.
No,
got out-rebounded in the paint, by the way, too.
Right. Well, there was a lot of misses. There were a lot of rebounds to be had, right? If you're making it, there is no rebound, right? But they were way below par in that. That's the nightmare. And that is going to happen to somebody. So maybe if you're Tennessee, the way you look at it is, okay, we got our one bad game out of there, the nightmare, and maybe that's out of our system and we won't have that type of game in the tournament. Because we see teams go on a roll where you can win, you can go for two straight weeks and just mm-hmm. be on a roll and be hitting double-digit threes in each game, and that carries you through. But you have that one bad game where you're not hitting threes and the other team is, you're out.
Yeah.
And I don't care how great you've been during the regular season. That's the thing that – look, let's look at it from Tennessee's perspective. Mm-hmm. What's everybody going to say if they don't go to at least the Final Eight? Rick Barnes can't get it done. But if they have a game like that, I don't know that it's Rick Barnes, right? Some days you just – the shots don't go in.
Mm-hmm.
And you face a team that is on fire. So there's just a lot of that can happen. Purdue is in that same mm-hmm. label right now of can't get it done in the tournament. They couldn't – last year, Fairley Dickinson was sitting back there going, take the three. Mm-hmm. Take it. I want to leave you wide open. We don't want Zach Edey to shoot. And they choked. They just choked. They didn't hit threes. They missed them. They have great shooters.
Mm-hmm.
Purdue has great shooters around Zach Edey. Last year in the first round, you wouldn't have known that. They couldn't hit it.
They got good shooters around them this year.
Yes.
If you watch that Big Ten game, them in Wisconsin, I mean, they were, even though the game was close for most of the game, you just saw they couldn't stop that inside-outside game with Zach Edey and those guards. You know, they wanted to try to, you know, play it man-to-man with Zach Edey, and then they tried to double him. And any time they did that, he just kicks it back out to the wing or kicks it back out to the top of the key for a three-pointer. It is hard to stop. And then he's unstoppable. He is, because he's bigger than everybody. Not just taller. He's just a big person. Has a nice shot. So it's hard to, you know, stop him when he's really on his game. Now, he's not the fleet of foot, but
right.
he
you
does
gotta,
enough.
You've got to try to
exactly.
exploit him on the other end. You've got
you
to
have
try
to play
bring
small,
him away from the back.
You have to play small ball with
And that's
Purdue.
What Fairley Dickinson uh-huh. did that well last year.
Exactly.
They had quick forwards. They were small guys. Mm-hmm. They couldn't match up with him on one end of the court. They were, you know, just doing what they could, fouling mm-hmm. them, pushing them out. but they got back doors. They moved out. They try to move them around.
Yeah.
I think that's what a team has to do against Purdue.
Yeah, you have to, and that's the only way. And I was wondering why Wisconsin didn't do it. But, I mean, they play Purdue twice. They play Purdue twice a year, and possibly, obviously, in the Big Ten tournament, it would be the third time. But you just try to figure out a way to minimize, you know, how he impacts a game. But Wisconsin couldn't stop him. So any other team that's going to play them, whether it's Montana State or Grambling, it's going to be a hard task for them to stop, you know, Zach Edey and that bunch. So, you know, and then obviously, you know, Tennessee and what they're capable of doing. And to me, it becomes even more pressure for Rick Barnes because you didn't win a game in the SEC tournament. It wasn't like you had to win the tournament. Winning the tournament would have been nice, but you didn't win a game in a tournament. You got embarrassed in the tournament. And now all of a sudden, are we to believe you can turn a light on and make a run to the national championship the way you played? And if Connect's not shooting the ball well, I don't know if this team is going to get far. I really don't. Even though they have other good players, I think he generates if you look at it, when he's scoring, it seems like everybody else flows better. When he's struggling, it seems like everybody else sort of struggles until they find their shot. And sometimes it may be a little bit too late to find that shot.
All right, last question before we go to the break, and then we'll talk some Preds. We'll come back to the brackets each hour here. Obviously, everybody's excited about this. Who would you rather be? Let's take Tennessee out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Kentucky, who's matched up as the 3 seed against Oakland in Marquette's side of the bracket. Of course, Houston is the 1 seed in that. Auburn, who just won the SEC tournament, played great in Nashville. Mm-hmm. They're a 4 seed against Yale. In fact, this is, again, why I'm not really sure why they don't value a great performance in the conference tournament a little bit more. To me, Auburn should be higher than a 4 seed. They're number 4 in the KenPom. How are they won the SEC tournament. How are they a 4 seed? I don't get that. But look, that's where they are. And they're in UConn's bracket, which UConn, of course, has got to be looking at and saying, oh my gosh, Auburn's the team that we could play in the Sweet 16? That's not an easy Sweet 16 for the number 1 overall seed. My goodness, that would be something. Oh, and then Alabama is also the 4. So who would you rather be among those 3 teams? I think Auburn's got the toughest draw. I think Kentucky's got a good draw, but and then there's Alabama. Who do you like?
Oh, man, I'm looking at Alabama's bracket.
Alabama's in North Carolina's bracket.
Carolina,
which is
Mississippi State, Michigan State.
1 seed on paper.
Yeah. And then you said Auburn.
Yeah.
Now, are you saying
who's got the best chance to make a deep run?
Oh, to make a deep run. A national championship. Does a deep run mean a final four?
Okay, let's say final four.
Auburn.
In theory, Alabama, and
Auburn, and Kentucky. I'm looking at Kentucky's now. I'm not sure if it's not Kentucky.
I love Kentucky's draw. I have to tell you.
Now, I think it may be Kentucky.
That's the team that.
But they play no defense.
That's what everybody's going to say. I think they will play good defense in this tournament.
Based on?
I just think they'll more. They're gonna. They've got to do it. They have to be at their best.
They're capable of scoring 120 points.
I like their draw,
but they're also capable of giving up 121 points.
I'm going with Alabama.
I'm going with Kentucky. Yeah, I'm going with Kentucky. I just think Kentucky has at least to get to the Sweet 16. At least to get to the Sweet 16, I would say.
Okay. Well, let's table that. We'll continue to debate that. If you've got thoughts, send them into our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Also, send us your Predators questions because we've got Adam Vingan coming up in the next segment to talk Preds. So hang with us. We're just getting started on this fun day on the show. Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game. All right. So much going on. March Madness. Back here on Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace, and we are broadcasting live, of course, from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round.
And we're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. And, of course, you must be 21 and up in Tennessee to bet. Now, let's bring in Adam Vingan. The Predators are now 12-0-2 in their last 14 games. And if you're like, okay, that's great, you've been watching them so far, they're not just winning. They've been winning decisively. They have outscored their opponents during this stretch 57-27. It is really remarkable what they have done here in the last few weeks to get themselves into a solid position right now. 82 points. They have not clinched a playoff spot yet, but they, and to their credit, St. Louis and Minnesota, they keep winning. St. Louis has won four in a row. There is back pressure still. There's work to be done to get into the playoffs, but Nashville has put themselves in the driver's seat. And so we bring in Adam Vingan for his insights. Adam, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing well. Doing well. So, Adam, since we last talked, right, I don't know that the Predators have lost, right? I think they were just starting this streak when we last spoke to you. It was around the time of the trading deadline. We were still wondering what was the right move. We were talking about adds and even players that they would subtract. So, first, now that you see the finished product, they have traded Yakov Trenin. They have brought in Jason Zucker and Anthony Beauvillier, and they didn't pay a big price for either guy. What do you think the net result is?
Yeah, that's a good question. And by the way, I think the last time we spoke was the day that Tommy Novak signed his contract.
Oh, that's right.
I can't remember.
Yes, that's correct.
And I wasn't far off, I don't think.
I think you were right there.
I think I said $3 million per season. So not terribly off. I'll pat myself on the back for that one.
And you should also get patted on the back for your prices for the rentals, right? You threw out almost the exact price that Florida paid for a Vladimir Tarasenko. We were kicking around the different names, and it all opened up in the next couple of days after that.
Well, I appreciate you stroking my ego. When I look at what the Predators have been able to do, and I went and pulled some numbers, just looking at the span of time of this point streak, which started February 17th on the road against St. Louis. So I looked at their traditional numbers and some of their underlying numbers, which are typically predictive of success. So as you said, Willie, the Predators have been dominant in terms of goal differential. They're averaging more than four goals per game during this point streak, which since February 17th is the highest total in the league, 4.07 to be exact. So first in the league in goals per game. They're also tied for first in the league in goals against per game during the point streak. They have allowed 1.93 goals against, which is tied for first with the Carolina Hurricanes, who by many accounts are a legitimate Stanley Cup contender. And then I looked under the hood a little bit, and the one thing I looked at, among other things, is the expected numbers, which we've talked a lot about. And Willie, I know you pay very close attention to these things. The expected goals for and against are often reliable barometers for how a team is playing. For the Predators, in expected goals for per game during this point streak are seventh in the NHL. And on the other side of the ice, expected goals against, they're first. So they are playing dominant in their own end. They're first in expected goals against and first in actual goals against. So that speaks to the goaltending they've been receiving. But it's not a case of, as we saw last year, for example. Think about how this team played down the stretch last year after the trade deadline. They were winning a lot of games. That was mostly, if not all, on the back of UC Saros. He had saved a ridiculous amount of goals above expected, and their actual defensive numbers were pretty poor. You could chalk that up completely up to goaltending, that UC Saros was trying to will the Predators into the postseason almost single-handedly. That has not been the case during this point streak. Not only have he and Kevin Lankinen been great, but the team in front of them has played outstanding defense. So when you look at this point streak as a whole, there's nothing fluky about this. The numbers over the past 14 games show that this team is playing incredibly well, and the fact that they've been able to sustain it for the past month is very encouraging.
So
I think that's an interesting point that I'm not sure the rest of the league has really caught on to, unless you're somebody who really pays attention to these numbers, because I think it's easy to say, oh, Nashville, they're on a roll right now. But as you said, that it's not just a hot goalie or they're getting all of the bounces. They've been deserving of having success here because of the formula. And I have to go back. It's still, because you look at the names on the paper, Adam, it doesn't jump out at you, as everybody knows, as an all-star studded lineup. You know, their stars are playing well, but on paper, this shouldn't be a team like that. So I go back to the effect of Andrew Brunette. What are your thoughts on that? He's got to be starting to get some consideration for the Jack Adams, doesn't he?
Yeah, probably. And, you know, I think of the other candidates that come off the top of my head. Oftentimes you can look at a team that's playing well and point to their coach getting Jack Adams consideration. Oftentimes, though, I feel like the formula for the Jack Adams, and correct me if I'm wrong, Willie, you vote on the Jack Adams, correct?
Correct. The broadcasters have the vote for the Jack Adams.
Right.
And I will tell you, it's hard, because every year there's at least six or seven that you can make a case for.
Right. And oftentimes I feel like the formula is coach of a team that nobody expected to be good at the start of the season.
Yes, that's one for sure category. No question.
So Andrew Brunette would certainly fall into that category. I think of the job that John Tortorella has done in Philadelphia to get that team into a playoff spot, an unexpected playoff spot. I'm sure he'll get a lot of love. And then, of course, the teams that are near the top of the league, like Rick Tocchet, Peter Laviolette, Jim Montgomery. Those coaches, I'm sure, will get a lot of consideration for the Coach of the Year award. But when I think about Andrew Brunette, and this was my conversation. I had this conversation a lot with Jared during the off season after the change in coaching was made. Andrew Brunette had a great record as coach of the Florida Panthers after he replaced Joel Quenneville. But that team was a wagon, to use the hockey term. I believe they were 7-0 at the time that the coaching change was made, and they ended up winning the President's Trophy that season. Now, that isn't to say that Brunette didn't have a role in helping the Panthers get there, but that team was so immensely talented that I think a lot of coaches could have had similar success. So I wouldn't say I was skeptical of Andrew Brunette, but when I looked at his record with the Panthers, I thought to myself, he had an incredibly talented team. And
right. I think that was the consensus at the time, and that's probably why they didn't keep him as the coach, which I think, as they look back on it, hey, you know, Paul Maurice hasn't done half bad. They're still good. But I think that's a fair point.
Right. But now you're seeing what he has done with this team. And as you said, Willie, when you look at the roster on paper, there aren't a lot of players that pop off the page. There's Roman Josi. There's Philip Forsberg. You know, if you can include Ryan O'Reilly in there if you would like. UC Saros, of course, has been an outstanding goaltender for the past few years. But they don't necessarily have that one guy that, you know, that stands above everybody else. Just looking at the other teams in the Western Conference, there's no Connor McDavid. There's no Leon Draisaitl. There's no, Jason Robertson. There's no Elias Pettersson. Or, you know, you can keep going down the list. There's not that one guy that necessarily grabs your attention when you're looking at the roster. And when you consider what this team was expected to do, how this team had been playing for the first half or so of the season, and what they've been able to do now, where they're basically guaranteed a playoff spot. As long as they don't completely collapse and do the opposite of what they're doing right now, as long as they don't go 0-12-2, let's call it, they're probably safe to make the playoffs, which I did not expect to be the case when the season started. I absolutely believe that Andrew Brunette deserves consideration for the Jack Adams Award. But to your point, Willie, sometimes with the Predators, I know this well, you know this well, they don't always get the national attention, even when they're playing well.
Right.
So it may be harder to make that that case for Brunette in terms of his qualifications versus some of the other coaches.
We're talking with Adam Vingan discussing the Nashville Predators, who are on a heater as we speak. Now, we assume with the way they're playing, Adam, that this team will make the playoffs. More than likely, they'll be the first wild card. Which team would be a better matchup for them if they are going to advance in the playoffs?
That's a good question, because the fact that the team they're playing, you know, at this point is going to be a division winner, most likely. Well, of course, they're going to be a division winner. But, you know, it could be Vancouver. It could be Dallas, Winnipeg, Colorado. The Central is very much up for grabs. Vancouver has a bit of a cushion in the Pacific Division, but they haven't been playing well lately, and Edmonton is sort of making things interesting in second place. So when Willie and I were talking about this yesterday over text, I was thinking to myself, okay, which team could present the most advantageous matchup for the Predators? And one thing I wanted to look at is how a team has been playing recently. And over the same stretch of time that the Predators are 12-0-2, the Canucks are 5-6-2. And their numbers are not good. They're 26th in the league in scoring it over that span. They're 20th in goals against. They're 26th in expected goals scored per game. Their starting goaltender, Thatcher Demko, is injured. Things have kind of gone sideways a bit in Vancouver. And depending on whether or not they're able to figure that out over the next month or so, I wonder if a hot team like the Predators playing a slumping team like the Canucks, you know, could be advantageous to them, the Predators, that is. Now, there are other factors you have to include that aren't shown up in the numbers, like schlepping all the way to Vancouver. That's not an easy flight. I recall vividly how tired I was in 2016 flying between Nashville, Anaheim, Nashville, and San Jose, back and forth and back and forth. And I can only imagine what it's like. Yeah, a lot of miles. And I can remember, and I can only imagine what it's like.
A lot of
like
Netflix shows in the air.
Yes.
Or a lot of books you could read. However you like to spend your time on a flight, you've got plenty of time.
Yeah, exactly. So that plays a role in it, too. So I wonder if Vancouver can't get out of the slump, I wonder if they're ripe for the picking. And as Willie, you said to me yesterday, there's going to be a tremendous amount of pressure on the Canucks in their market, which can have a detrimental effect. You know, the other team I think about is Dallas, because they're a high scoring team, as Predators fans know. The last time they lost a game in regulation, we all saw what the Stars were capable of. But one thing about the Stars that really stands out to me is that their goaltending has not been good this year. Jake Ottinger has not been good. The team, their goaltending has not been good. They've outscored that issue for most of the season. But if the Predators can lock things down defensively like they have been over the past month and they're able to get to Jake Ottinger, I wonder if we could see a bit of a reverse of what we saw in, what is it, 2019, when the Stars upset the Predators. I wonder if you could see a reverse of that.
Oh, man, Predator fans would enjoy that. That's for sure, if that could happen.
I think about Dallas. Like I think Vancouver, you know, if they're not able to get out of the slump, I wonder if that could be a good matchup. But I think about Dallas just because they have unreliable goaltending this year. If the Predators play as well defensively as they have over the past month, they can mitigate that. And if they can get to Jake Ottinger in net, I think the Stars could be ripe for an upset.
Adam, do you have time to hang with us for one more segment?
I do.
Okay, hang with us. We got a few more questions for you. And if you have questions for Adam, if you have Predators questions for us, text them right now or call in 615-737-1025. Our phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Stay tuned. More with Adam Vingan. We're talking Predators, and we'll have more on the other side. Hang with us. Yes, there's been some good old hockey games here recently. Also, we've got the brackets going on here. It is March Madness. We're talking Predators right now with Adam Vingan. But also, remember to sign up and play the 102.5 The Game Bracket Challenge. Once again, I finished last year in this challenge, but it's your chance to win great prizes, including four-day passes to Bonnaroo. Hello, all you music fans. The teams have been selected. So go to thegamenashville.com. That's thegamenashville.com/bracket challenge. You'll see it on our website, and you'll fill out your bracket and compete. The 102.5 The Game Bracket Challenge is brought to you by ESPN Bet Sportsbook, Twin Peaks, and Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Adam Vingan is with us. Adam, D-Mace has a good question for you about the newcomers here.
Yeah, because it seems like, Adam, they've been getting a lot of good play out of the third and fourth line, and they're going to need it because that, you know, the first line is taking up, you know, carrying their weight, and they're doing a good job at it. But that second line, and I know they've added two new players, Bevilier and Zucker, to the second line, but it seems like they're not getting much out of them in regards to goal scoring. How can they get, you know, more out of them? Is it just implementing two new guys and they're still learning the system and still learning how to play with one another?
Yeah, that's also a good question. And to your point, Derek, when you look at the underlying numbers, again, of that line specifically with Anthony Beauvillier, Colton Sissons, and Jason Zucker, it hasn't been great. They have controlled 41.2% of expected goals at even strength. That's not good. You want to be over 50%. So in terms of the quality of offense, when that line is on the ice, the majority of it is going toward the other team. So that line has not stood out positively, at least according to the numbers. But the other lines that they've been relying on during this point streak have been very good. We know about Forsberg, O'Reilly, and Nyquist. The fourth line of McCarron, Sherwood, and Smith has been strong as well. But I think the line that's really stood out to me is that line with Novak, Jankowski, and Evangelista. They've been very dangerous offensively, generating high-quality chances for the Predators. So, you know, three of the four lines right now are clicking. The point, to your point, Derek, the one that isn't is the one that includes two new players. So, you know, perhaps you can chalk that up to needing to develop that chemistry because those other lines, the three other lines, have been together for a while now. They know their tendencies. They know how they like each other like to play and how they play off of each other. You know, so your hope is that as that line, that Sissons-Zucker-Beauvillier line, continues to learn each other, that they can catch up with the rest. But so far, the numbers suggest that it hasn't been going well.
So, Adam, looking ahead here, another thing that I think has to be noted, and you've started to see it here in the last couple of games, you still have to knock on wood or keep your fingers crossed, grab your lucky rabbit's foot, whatever you got.
Four-leaf clover.
And you've got to hope that this is just a year where you get some good fortune with staying healthy, because to this point, I don't think you can complain about how it's fallen. Now, last year, maybe this is a little correcting, because last year they played the last month and a half without Roman Josi. They played the last half of the season almost, or at least third of the season. It was right after the All-Star break is when Philip Forsberg, the first game after the All-Star break, got hurt against Philadelphia, the concussion, and that was it for him. So they had a ton of injuries last year. They've started to have a couple of D-men, Spencer Stastny, Dante Fabbro, go down. So that is something, right, that can mess with your overall statistical footprint. So you have to hope for the best, and you got to hope that your depth can do the job.
Yeah, the most important thing is when you sort the Predators' games played individually, there are six players who have appeared in every game this season, and four of them are Philip Forsberg, Ryan O'Reilly, Gustav Nyquist, and Roman Josi. Like, that's very important, that none of their star defensemen and their top line, none of those players, again, knock on wood if you'd like, have missed a game yet for this team. That's huge. You know, the other two players who haven't missed a game, Colton Sissons and Jeremy Lauzon. But, yes, you're right. The fact that they haven't had significant injury in terms of missing a key player for a long period of time. As you said, Willie, last year they missed Philip Forsberg for a long time. They missed Roman Josi for a long time. They missed Matt Duchene for a long time. They missed Ryan Johansson for a long time. They injuries definitely caught up to them. Perhaps it's the hockey gods smiling down upon them with favor this year after not doing so much last year. But yes, that is the one thing that can change everything about how a team is playing. But so far, so good for the Predators. They haven't had to deal with too many significant injuries, and their star players have been in every game.
All right, so if I put you on the spot, and let's say for now, because there's still an outside shot. We know how Edmonton can just go for weeks without losing, right? They've done it. They can be very streaky. But let's take them out of the mix, and let's stick with the four that we've talked about. Vancouver, if they hold on to the Pacific, and Nashville would be, if they're the two wild card, that's who they could play. And then any of the three that are they're tied at the top of the Central right now, Dallas, Winnipeg, and Colorado. In your mind, what is the best matchup for Nashville if they make it?
It's tough. I mean,
We spent a long time debating this away from the rink, Adam, just so you know. I don't know that there's an easy answer.
No, there isn't, because each of those teams has a significant strength. Like, look at Winnipeg, for example. Winnipeg is a great defensive team, and they've got the best goalie in the league, in my opinion, over the course of the full season in Connor Hellebuck. And we know that can change the series for sure. And something tells me that you do not want to face Nathan MacKinnon in the playoffs. I mean, the Predators have done it a couple times. I don't advise doing that. Nathan MacKinnon, having to deal with Nathan MacKinnon for up to seven games, you know, that seems a bit dangerous. That's why I continue to settle on Dallas. I think that Dallas, as I said, great offensive team, deep team. You know, they added Chris Tanev at the deadline. Was it Logan Stankoven, young player, has come in and been incredibly productive for them. And the Predators fans know about Hintz and Pavelski and Robertson. Duchesne's been good for them, all of that. But I do believe that goaltending is an issue for them. And as I said earlier, if the Predators can play as well defensively as they have been over the past month and neutralize Dallas's offense, I think that Jake Oettinger is vulnerable. And when I put all of that together, it's not going to be easy. But I think the most advantageous matchup, in my opinion, right now is Dallas.
Okay, so we're going to hold you to that. We'll see. Nashville is 2-2 against Dallas, and of course they had the one that. They had one with 15 seconds left, and Dallas scored two goals somehow in the last 15 seconds, which I don't think I've seen. And then, of course, there was the 9-2 craziness. Nashville won twice in Dallas. Nashville's 2-1 against Winnipeg. They're 2-0 so far against Colorado. They've got to go to Colorado later. They both of the wins are at home. And Vancouver, who I kind of tend to agree, looks like the weakest team on paper to me. But Vancouver has beaten Nashville three times and beaten them all kind of decisively. But that was really before Nashville got in that groove that we've been talking about. All three of those matchups were relatively early in the season. Adam, really good stuff as always. We'll check in again here very soon, and we'll see how this continues to shake out.
Before I go, I have one piece of advice for people filling out their brackets for your bracket challenge.
Take Duke all the way, right?
No, that's a superstitious thing that I don't like to do. I just have to leave you with one thing. A, B, C. Anybody but Carolina.
Okay.
That's my advice.
So there you go. Sparties, D-Mace, take them out in the second round. That's all you got to do.
Hey,
take
the
Sparties.
Derek, place a phone call to your friend Tom Izzo and tell him to do me a huge favor, okay? I need that.
Hey, we got you. We got you. Don't worry about it. March is no longer – it's not March anymore. It's Izzo.
It's the month of Izzo time.
Yeah,
it's the Izzo. Month of Izzo.
Yeah, the month of Izzo.
All right. Adam, we'll talk soon.
Thanks, guys.
Good stuff. Adam Vingan, talking Predators. All right, when we come back, Chase McCabe is going to sit in and chat with D-Mace. I'm going to step out just for a little bit. I'll be back here very shortly. Stay tuned. We've got a lot more coming here on the show. And don't forget, the game phone text line, as always, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And we're broadcasting from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.